Vi er i gang. Mitt navn er Petter Reynoldsen, og jeg er formann i NUG, og en av de som arrangerer de her møtene. We'll switch to English now, because Norwegian is not the common language in Germany yet. after the meeting, we'll head over for the Greek restaurant up the street, so Homan is going to join us. We'll probably need to have some headcounts for reservations. Did you get a count?
No.
No?
13.
Yeah. Got your number?
It's close enough to the reservation.
Sounds good. And I will send a list to get the number of attendees. I'll send it down in the room and during the presentation. Just put your name down there and we'll put you on the announcement list if you want to. Anyway, today is the December meeting of the Norwegian Unix User Group Oslo. I'm very pleased to see so many people here. January meeting is not decided yet, so please give us some suggestions if you have ideas for a presentation for January. This meeting is a faraway traveler. Actually, his whole family joined us for this meeting. I'm very pleased to welcome the author of Knoppix and the author of Linux distribution for blind people. I don't remember the name of it, but
Adriana.
Adriana. Mm-hmm. Anyway, welcome, Close Knoppix, Knoppix, and his wife.
Knopper.
Sorry.
No problem. Lots of people do that.
Yeah. Anyway, give them a big hand.
Thanks, Petter, for the invitation. Short introduction. My name is Klaus Knopper. I'm not really an informatics person. I only use computer because I have to. It's more working with them than playing with them or trying to get around errors. So we're trying to make things easy enough for me to use. And this was also the idea behind the Knoppix Live City, so that you don't have to do all the trouble with configuration and finding out which hardware is installed. Meet my wife Adriana. By chance, this is the same name that our accessible system for blind people has. It's pure chance. She will present the Adriana system focused on blind people on her notebook. Unfortunately, she cannot speak English well. She can understand a lot of it, but doesn't talk much English yet, so I will translate for her. I cannot talk Norwegian, but after being here for a day, I think I can understand much of it. So it's we'll see if our speech recognition or our speech output is recognizable for you then. And I will just start right away. Trying to keep below 1 hour, because the tape will not last, I guess. I'm really trying. I have prepared 28 slides, but I'm not going to show all of them. Probably after the presentations, when questions come, we can show some additional slides with more information than will fit into the talk. So the general accessibility topic today is how can we work with computers when, well, we can't see or we can't hear or we are not able to type something on the keyboard because, well, there are people who just cannot use a keyboard. So the standard statistical average user's desktop is today still a mouse-oriented desktop. It requires vision, it requires the ability to find icons on the desktop, and this should give users a visual overview of running programs and options, allows you to do, of course, many things. Many of you use graphical desktops, and it has many icons and menus that you just have to click to start a program. You don't have to know and type any commands or options. Though many shared users like me will say that's not an advantage if you don't know what's the name of the program that you want to start, and just searching in the menu will usually take longer than just typing a command name in the shell. So GNU Linux has many beautiful desktops like KDE, GNOME, ICVM, lots of graphical desktops. It has some cool desktops like those with rotating windows, and some of them you can turn windows around and write something on the back or make them transparent. Actually, some of those are really useful for vision impaired people who have some kind of low vision but still can see something on the screen. I will show some of the options of Compiz Fusion later, which can enable people with low vision to keep using a graphical desktop. But if you take away all the fancy graphics you usually have, you get a blind person's view on the screen, and this is just this. And now you try to find an icon and click on the program and go to a web page. It's just not possible because you don't even know where the program is located on your screen. And that is because the graphical desktops assume that a position on the screen or a certain look and feel of an icon will tell the user what you can do with this program. And this is just not possible if you have no vision and no view to the screen. So this is the main problem we have today. This makes it really hard to read some web pages and to use some programs that are especially written for people who can see all the menus and buttons. As a short overview, I will start with some definitions concerning accessibility, some examples, then we will show some solutions and tool sets that we have in open source today, and some trends for the future. Some companies have apparently discovered that accessibility is a very hot topic for selling programs. If you just write on the program, this is accessible, then more people will buy it. Some governments are required to buy or develop accessible software, so this is also a big thing for companies who develop software. Some web pages and web shops also assume that everybody can access their web page, and so they put floating graphics on the screen and you have to follow the button with the mouse and hit it at the right moment. That's terrible, of course. This is not really fun if you just want to order a product or buy something on the internet. So also some trends to observe, and we'll find out that we really need standards instead of just fancy programs who have the word accessibility written on them. So what is accessibility really? Accessibility is a general term used to describe the degree to which a system is usable by as many people as possible. This doesn't only mean blind people or vision impaired, but also people who have no speech capabilities. They just cannot understand a written sentence, like illiterate people. We have lots of these in some countries. And people who are not able to spell a word on the keyboard. So these are different kinds of disabilities, and we are trying to make systems, of course, in open source that can be used by as many people, as many different people as possible. This is in general independent from computers. We should generally do that for everything, for books, for products that can be used. And what we can do as software developers is just trying to improve the internet or computer software. Some types of handicaps. Some people cannot hear or have impaired hearing, which is usually not a problem for graphical desktops. Graphical desktops assume that you can see everything. So 30% of your perception is just unneeded in graphical desktops. So people with no hearing usually have no problems using graphical desktops. Low vision can be a problem. Some buttons are just too small to see what's written on them. And no vision is also a problem for graphical desktops. And we have to distinguish between people who had no vision from birth, because most of them don't have a geometrical understanding of the screen. They just don't know how a square screen would look like and what you have to do with it. Or people who turn blind later, because they know if you tell them go a little to the top left from there, they can imagine how it looks like in their head because they have been seeing before. So this is kind of different disability for blind people. Coordination, some people cannot move their hands in a way that allows them to operate a mouse or a keyboard, and also mental handicaps. It's, for some people, it's just not possible to understand a long sentence longer than 3 or 4 words. So we also need programs that are very easy to understand and which have not as much buttons and tooltips that would confuse the user who is just trying to write a text or print something on the printer. Well, low and insufficient skills is not really a handicap, but for children and for school, for primary school, if the children cannot read yet, they don't find the right buttons. And a little future look out, the one laptop per child is addressing that. I don't know if you have ever seen one. The one laptop per child uses a non-reading desktop. It does everything with symbols. And small children who haven't had language in school yet, they can use it immediately. They know where to click. It looks like a game or it looks like a book, and we try that and we go back there. Adults have a problem using that because they just expect to be some writing on the buttons which tells them what this button does. So we actually have a disability in the other direction, that some people are so used to buttons being labeled that they cannot work with buttons without labels. So each of these disabilities, in theory, requires an entirely different desktop. It's also part of the conclusion at the end that we cannot have the accessible desktop which does everything. Each user has different needs, and each user will need a different kind of desktop to work most efficiently. So the general problem is an abstraction layer is missing from software. Since the beginning of software, nobody thought of it, apparently. And it's now coming today that we have to separate between content, which is the real information that you want to access, and the presentation, which means the look and feel, the view, and the kind you have to operate programs. Which also means missing application-independent layers for interaction interfaces. The X-Window system was programmed with graphics in mind. The shell was programmed with textual thinking users, or just users who wanted to really operate the computer and tell him exactly what to do. And so we have no abstraction layer which can join both, so you can have both possibilities. So we need toolkits which are acting as a kind of glue between those two possibilities to work with the computer. Some approaches of accessibility you may have seen already. The hardware layer, letting additional hardware do the job. This is always a good excuse for proprietary vendors. They say, oh, we don't have to improve the program. We just plug in this device and every program will be accessible. Which is, of course, not possible if the program doesn't support this device. One example of accessible hardware you may have seen before. Ich nehme mal deine Brezel und zeig die so ein bisschen. Sollen wir es umgehen lassen? This is a Braille device which allows you to read a computer screen by touch. So every 6 points or 8 points even on this device is meaning one letter on the computer screen. And the pins will go up and display a character in the Braille alphabet. You can display virtually every sign in every computer or natural language in order to see what's on the screen. So actually, this is also an input device, so I can control Adriana's computer and see what's on her screen. If I could just read Braille, of course. Some people can do this. I only see some small letters here, but I will let it go around. Please be careful with it. Things like these are terribly expensive. I will just show it to the camera. I don't know if the camera can catch from a side view how the pins go up and down.
Yes.
It can.
Too close.
Too close.
Thank you. There we are.
And some practical thing with this is also, I would like this on my keyboard. There are additional buttons. If you press them, the cursor on the screen moves to the location that is displayed at this character. It's just like touching a letter on the screen, and the cursor moves there, and you can then edit on the screen directly. This device allows this. So actually, blind computer users have some things that are very fancy and would be useful for us too. So I'll let it go around. Unfortunately, these things are so rare that they are quite expensive. You probably already know one. Do you want to see? You have one.
So I will just start here.
It's not very easy to get one, especially this costs about 3,700 euros. And normally a person can only afford it via health insurance. And you have to tell your health insurance that you really, really need it, and then you get one and they will pay for it. It took us about 2 weeks of letters from and back, and then we got one. Okay, so this is the hardware layer, like additional keyboards or hardware sound synthesizers which try to read what's on the textual screen. On the application layer, on the software layer, we have to build accessibility improvements directly into individual programs. This would be you change each program to be accessible, to speak buttons or to speak what's on the screen. Programs for children sometimes do that, like G-Compri, which our kids play very very much by themselves. It reads what's on the screen, so they learn reading and learn to use language, and then later when they can do that, they can use the keyboard and mouse to find out how to operate the program. Of course, this is very time expensive if you do this, building accessibility directly into individual programs. You have to change each program, so developers try to do a system layer. Some toolkits are used by many programs, like in KDE, you use the Qt toolset and the KDE libraries. In GNOME, you use the GTK Plus libraries. And each of those graphical libraries has its own accessibility layer, which allows screen readers and other programs to connect to a program and see what the user does. So it reads menus and it displays what's on the screen on a Braille device or on a sound card. Library and middleware layer linking with accessibility libraries and actively calling interface functions thereof would be closely connected to this possibility. So you build libraries, and if you link a program with a library, then you can use accessibility functions from that one. So these are some solutions in hardware for accessibility, Braille devices, which is just going around, optical magnification. In earlier times, large lenses and optical enlargement was used to display stuff on the computer screen. Nowadays, we have software that can do that, and I'm going to show some of it later too. Hardware speech synthesizers are a little out of date. Most software speech synthesizers have better quality and are also faster. So hardware speech synthesizers are very seldom nowadays. Some I/O devices for input, like joystick-alike input devices or optical measurement devices, like the head mouse, which allows you to put a kind of webcam either on your head or on the desk, and you have a red point on your forehead, and if you move the head, the camera will detect the movement and move the mouse on the screen. So you don't have to use the mouse with your hand, you can use the mouse by moving your head. Sound or fingerprint operated relays, input by personal trained hardware or embedded software add-ons that emulate standard input functions. There are lots of different disabilities, so there are lots of different input devices who try to emulate keyboard or mouse functions. Yeah, the general problem remains. If we have to use hardware like this, it is still not possible to interact with the software in the same way by just emulating the normal I/O. Solutions in software. On the application layer, I already said that adding accessibility functions into each individual program, like in games or educational software, which has its own speech function with recorded text in native language. Or active text reading support, cut and paste, read aloud functions like in Conqueror and some other browsers. These have a plugin, you can mark text and say, please speak this text to me. Of course, this is not the way to go if you cannot see the browser at all. Desktop accessibility plugins or daemons like the ones in Beryl or Compute Fusion for magnifying the screen are also very popular now. Pro for this method, the program has the complete information about object descriptions and action handling and contour. It is very inefficient and inconsistent if trying to rewrite each program for accessibility this way. For example, if you have a button that causes a certain action if you click on it, how does the user know that if the screen reader just says the text on the button? He doesn't know it's a button. He just sees there's a text, and what can I do with this text? The program itself has the complete object description. The program knows it's a button, so it can, if it can speak, it can tell the user this is a button. If you hit this button, you get a menu. A just purely text screen reader cannot do it. On the operating system layer, patching or hacking the operating system or desktop, and the most known software that does this for Windows is probably JAWS. It's a proprietary screen reader for Windows that exchanges some libraries of Windows and makes buttons talk. It tries to do that, telling which kind of button, which kind of menu it is, and also reads the tooltips. But on every upgrade of the standard Windows software, it tends to break, and you have to reinstall it because all the libraries are patched or updated, and you will also keep all errors in those libraries. So this is not a very good approach in technical terms, though many people are using it under Windows. Kernel or library patches. One idea was we have a Linux kernel, so the entire operating system, the entire hardware known to this kernel can add accessibility functions, so let's just use the kernel for doing this. Unfortunately, the kernel doesn't know which kind of button in a text browser has, and the kernel also doesn't know what you can do with those text elements. Pro, it doesn't require changes in the end user software. Contra is not all functions are supported, and it's likely to break with every OS update if you build this directly into the operating system. I missed one option. APIs and extensions or plugins that add an interface to I/O, such as ATK, ATSP for GTK widget set. This is working especially well, and the Contra doesn't apply for it. So I will show how this works with Orca and OpenOffice a little later. So now we have a look at the Adriano desktop. The acronym stands for Audio Desktop Reference Implementation and Network Environment. Hard to think of this, but it's exactly what it does. It tries to make an audio-focused desktop, so you actually don't have to see the screen, and it works without using a monitor. So what you could do with it, maybe in the future, is using your navigation system in the car for browsing web pages, because the navigation system will read newspapers or web pages or whatever you want to access in the internet to you. And you can operate it via an easy-to-use menu that can be used with a kind of keyboard or remote control, or if you have to drive, then of course a speech input. We don't have speech input in that yet, but it would be a nice future extension. So this system is supposed to eliminate dependency of viewing the screen and adds two more options of information reception by hearing. So actually hearing is the most important part of it, the audio part, which reads to you what's on the screen and also tells you what are links and what are information parts of a web page. And optionally by touch, if you can afford or have gotten from the health insurance a braille device, it enables you to also use this braille device for the same functions. It's focused at blind users and I would say also to non-techies who are just too overwhelmed with lots of buttons and colors on the screen, like me. I like to use the shell because it's easy, it doesn't have thousands of menus in it. I know that I don't have to click anything to make it work, and therefore I like to work with this system too, actually. So it's focused on blind users and non-technical computer users who are overwhelmed by too much graphics on the screen. This would be the middleware architecture of the Adriano system, which we are going to show in a minute in operation. On the hardware side, the only thing you need is a computer with a standard keyboard, with a sound card, and everything else is optional. If you have some kind of internet connection, that's of course good, because the networking environment part in the abbreviation Adriano suggests that it's also good for surfing the internet and do some multimedia and streaming with it. So network connection is not required, but it's a nice to have. You can use your own cell phone for sending and receiving GPRS. You don't have to use a web service for that. It has an interface between any cell phone that can receive SMS, and so you can read and write SMS using your own cell phone on the computer. For speech output, in the current version that Adrian uses, we use the Festival speech synthesizer, which is GPL. Unfortunately, not all voices for a festival are GPL. The German voice isn't yet, so we try to switch to eSpeak later. Festival has an advantage that it is very natural speaking, that it has a lot of rules. It's written in a kind of Lisp dialect, so it is very extensible. Sounds well, but it's also very hard to integrate new languages. I'm not sure if there's a Norwegian language in Festival yet, but we have English, Spanish, and some Indian dialects in Festival available. I hope that most other languages will join later, but it's about 1 or 2 months of real hard work to create a new language for this kind of software. The real interface for reading the screen is SBL. The original name is SUSE Blind Linux, but it doesn't have really anything to do with SUSE. It's just developed from people that work at SUSE. It's purely GPL, no proprietary parts. And it is now split into a part that does the actual screen reading, which is still called SBL, and a Braille device driver that can also be used with graphical screen readers like Orca. So you have one Braille driver for text mode as well as graphical mode. That's very practical. On the application side, we use Elynx, which is a fine text browser that can also play videos, can do JavaScript. So you have JavaScript capabilities that you sometimes need for some web pages, and a lot of other features that you wouldn't really expect being in a text browser, like frames, tables, and other things that make web pages accessible in text mode. For chatting, we use IRSI, which can use ICQ and IRC. For email, we use MUT, and for contacts, we have a small notebook function, which is plain text for adding addresses that can be later used also for the SMS functions. Also private functions, you can extend the system. It's bash script-based very easily. Caller ID list from your telephone and other things can be added to the system and also appears in the menu by then. Okay, I think this would be a good time to switch and show something of the Arduino system. Mm-hmm. Oh. Actually, the Braille device is already here. Liegt schon auf dem Tisch, hat aber keiner Bescheid gesagt. Kann ich den Bildschirm schon umschalten?
Was soll ich jetzt machen?
Erstmal erzählen, wie das kam.
Das kannst du ja auch erzählen, aber das ist Spaß, wenn ich das jetzt ausmachen muss. Mach bitte so.
Sorry? Oh, the audio. For the people who hear a synthetic voice for the first time, I hope it's not too loud. Audio is plugged in.
I'm seeing the internet with the same call silence.
It's not like the nice female voice that you hear on answering machines. These are pre-recorded voices, so it's a little unfair to compare it with this. This is a purely synthetic voice. What it does, it has a lot of rules that know how to speak a word or a sentence, and it puts together lots of pieces of recorded voices, so-called diphones, which is a combination of syllables or parts of human language. It's different for each kind of language. The German language has about 3,400 diphones, Norwegian probably more, and this putting this together synthetically doesn't sound natural. It cannot sound natural. For a really natural sound, you would really need pre-recorded sentences, and then with the sentences on your screen, you have to just play the WAV file for it. This would be very natural, but this so-called unit selection requires a lot of databases, and it's very expensive because you have to do lots of recordings and always in the same voice level and by a professional speaker. And therefore, the best thing we can do by now is diaphone, which is what you're hearing now in German language.
But it doesn't have any intonation.
That's true. It does have the intonations, but we purposely switched that off. If you're getting to read a web page and you are used, if someone reads it to you, that he will emphasize parts of the web page that are really important. You get totally confused if your speech output suddenly emphasizes or lowers the voice as if something was happening on that web page. And it doesn't really happen. It's just trying to put rules together with some interpunction, that comma, colon, dot, and it tries to emphasize at the correct places, but it has no knowledge what's really written on that page. It doesn't know which is important. Okay, so we made that very monotone now, which is better understandable. In that part, later I will also show Orca, which has intonation, quite good intonation, but the voice does even sound more synthetical. Of course, we try to do 100% GPL software. The only proprietary part in this one is the German voice recording, which we are using here, which is more natural, but unfortunately not GPL. A question?
Is this Festival or
eSpeak? This is Festival with an Ambirola voice file. We are not using Ambirola, but we are using the Ambirola voice file together with Festival. So we try to change that to eSpeak. Yeah?
Yes, how does the user that has this voice presented, how do they react to having a monotone voice compared to other ways of doing reading?
I would say for our public version, we will use eSpeak with intonation. We'll give that a try and not use the monotonic version. This version is now set up so that Adriane can use it more, most conveniently. It was her preference to do it that way. That's why I set it that way. There were some web pages where the voice got really low, so like it was reading a crime book and something like that. And it's really not good if you want to buy something on eBay and it suddenly says, oh.
Don't buy this TV.
Don't buy this. Or the other way around. Yeah. It emphasized too much and you buy too much stuff. So that was the purpose.
Okay.
Yeah, so don't be disappointed that this sounds very monotonous. This is not the final version that we will put on the Live City.
But you said that your wife preferred to have
the monotonous.
Yes.
It's different if you are used to a synthetic voice than if you heard it for the first time. If you hear eSpeak for the first time, you think this is terrible, I can never use it. After a while, you notice, it does speak very clearly and it speaks words in a way that you can even hear similar words differently. So the purpose is that you can understand a sentence perfectly. It's not that it should sound beautiful.
Okay.
Of course, there are singing versions of Festival as well, but that's an entirely different topic. It's more related to music. It's just not possible to automatize a good voice in a way that it is doing a natural intonation. Gut, die Anekdote?
Ja, ich habe das mal eine Frage.
Ja.
Wieso ist jetzt das Vollzeichen hier? Das war vorher noch. Und jetzt bin ich
umgesetzt. Einsehen Sie.
Ah, da hat wahrscheinlich jemand drauf umgedreht und das bestellt. Ich hoffe, das ist nicht permanent. Aber geht's? Kannst du lesen?
Nein, ich kann nicht lesen. Das hast du nicht bekannt.
Naja, ist aber noch keine Seite geladen.
Mit dem Vanguard-Taste einsehen Sie Internet mit dem Kauf sein.
Das fängt hier hinten rechts an.
Das war ja früher nicht so.
Umbeband.
Ja.
Hast du nochmal ausgeschaltet und eingeschaltet?
Wenn ich auf eine Seite gehe, dann ist es unbekannt. Das kann ja nicht sein, oder?
Umbeband.
Ja, da steht jetzt AIT. AIT muss.
Unfortunately, some key presses may have changed the setting of the Braille, but I hope we can still do it. I will reset it later.
Okay. Ich versuche jetzt auf eBay zu gehen, und das geht nicht.
Und der dann?
Das ist unbekannt. Das ist auch auf eBay.
Unbekannt.
Ah, das kann aber nicht sein, oder?
Unbekannt.
Nimm doch mal an, also das ist sehr klein. Probier nochmal.
Unbekannt.
Du kannst es da gucken. Also, was haben wir gerade gesehen?
Nee. Probieren wir eine andere Konsole. So bei Konsolen.
Und dann gab er etwas, der einzeln sind. Unbekannt.
Ja.
Unbekannt.
Da steht jetzt, warte mal, da steht jetzt eBay, aber dahinter ist das nicht. Ja, geht nicht. Da
steht es jetzt noch. Unbekannt. Erst recht.
Da muss ich schon. Da ist nichts mehr. Okay. Wieso das denn? Ja, und was soll ich dann vorführen?
Okay. Aber das Menü Hauptmenü geht, oder?
3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3
1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3 1 3
Was soll ich denn sonst machen?
Was soll ich jetzt machen? Brechen? Ja, aber was soll ich jetzt vorführen? Ich kann das nicht machen.
Wir gehen einfach durch das Menü. We have a settings problem here. Unfortunately, I have no settings editor yet because I've been trying to keep it very simple. So I will have to translate here.
Demo effect? The demo effect?
Yeah, the demo effect. First time in 2 years. This is the main menu in German language. This is actually what is presented when you start the Adreno system for the first time. The first menu points is help with the enter key and arrow key down for next menu. So it tells you what you can do next and reads it to you. So if you can find the enter key on the keyboard and the arrow key, you can already operate the entire menu. This menu is very changeable, so you can put your favorite applications in it, and it tries to do an abstraction between the program name and the actual thing that is being done. For our development system, we have put the names of the programs here, like Elinks or MUT or ERC, to tell the user what is being started if he starts the individual program. So the second point would be going into the internet with the browser Elinks, which is the text browser I mentioned before. Second point is email, chat with ERC, I already talked something about that. Maybe we have a look at the SMS function, because I learned that this is not supported with Windows yet, so we have something actually very new here. We can show.
Sollen
wir
eine
SMS verschicken?
Ja.
Sollen wir probieren?
Ja. Also ich habe jetzt die Möglichkeit hier zu schreiben oder zu lesen, aber da ich ja meine SMS vor dem Vortrag alle gelöscht habe, kann man nicht so.
Ja, dann schreib es mal ein und ich antworte dann. We are now going to send them SMS. Ist da auch nicht vor, ne?
Er liest nichts vor.
Kann man es lesen auf der Brettseite? Also es steht auf der Brettseite. Yeah. So this would be a short message that is being typed in a standard text editor. We used Nano. I couldn't get support for my primary choice of VI though. I'm still trying to make a very easy VI version that can be used. So currently we use Nano, which is okay for most applications.
Excellent choice.
Okay, so very short message, and now she's sending this to me.
Was gibt's Neues?
Empfängernummer eingeben. Oder die Auswahlliste. Würde die Auswahlliste nehmen. You can enter the number of the person's cell phone directly here, or you can choose it from a menu. If you just hit return, wenn jetzt einfach return drückst, you get a choice. This is actually the address database with short names connected to phone numbers, email addresses and post numbers.
1 5 1 6 Holzhandel.
This one doesn't have a search function yet.
It would be very good if she could just press K and something else.
That's true. That would mean we have to put the abbreviations on the front. Then it's jumping to the first letter. That would be with this extension. You're right. If you type the number, then you can get to a letter. But of course, it would be easier if you just type the name or start typing the name and it jumps to the number. Ja, du hast gefunden.
Das ist auch verschwunden.
Ja.
Ja, das ist der
Witz. Ja, aber es stimmt schon.
9, 7, 6, 2, 2.
There's also the possibility to send a reception as a receipt. So if the SMS arrives at the recipient, then you will get a return message to tell you that it really arrived. What you can do with your cell phone, it just arrived on my. So, and I will send a quick answer. Of course, I need a lot longer time to type an SMS message on the small keys here.
It's an age thing.
You have to send a lot of letters.
It's an age thing, maybe.
20-year-olds can type a lot faster than that.
Nimm die Tastatur, es geht schneller.
Yeah, I would take the keyboard, but it doesn't fit into my cell phone.
You have those turbo thumbs.
Yeah.
I'm also trying to type a smiley here, so that I can show another function of the text translation, and I'm sending the reply. It's there. So now she can go to the SMS menu again and start the reading of SMS, which now gets every SMS message that just arrived from the on the cell phone and displays them into a list. The most important information, of course, first, like the date when it arrived and the number who sent it and parts of the SMS message. And if she hits return, wenn du auf return drückst, dann kann man die ganz lesen. So this is the full message sender, it's my telephone number. the date of receipt and the text that I sent. Kannst du mal die Zeile mit dem Smiley vorlesen?
Ab schon da minus.
Doch, schon da, Doppelpunkt, minus. Naja.
Schon da minus.
Also the setting problem. It should read the smiley as a laughing smiley. It has a translation that can put several key, several letter combinations into a spoken word. So if someone doesn't know what a smiley is because he cannot imagine that a colon, a minus and a closing bracket would look like a face, it's getting read to him that this is a smiling face in the message. Gut, kannst wieder rausgehen. She can now answer directly, so she doesn't have to type my number again.
Sie jetzt ihre SMS und speichern Sie mit Steuerung X.
Now it grabs the telephone number from the SMS and uses this as the new recipient number.
But again, she has to remember the number. It would be nice to have an address book with the number
That was the address book with the short names in the beginning, where the numbers are stored. But if you answer to an SMS, you don't have to type the number, you don't have to type the name.
No, I understand that. Unless she knows your number.
Ah, that's right. So you would like a reverse translation, that the number is being translated into the abbreviation. That would be with the extension too. That's right.
And the text message, it keeps reading it as the individual numbers in a date or a time, for example. Do you have any method of converting this into a spoken date
Once
or time?
Once we switch to eSpeak, this will change automatically.
eSpeak only spells numbers letter by letter if they start with a zero, like postal numbers. If they've written as a normal number, like in a euro or a cone amount, then it will read this as a total, 1 million something.
Won't that cause problems for phone numbers?
Yes, but if the phone number starts with a plus or with a zero, it should be no problem. I know, it's not easy because the program has no knowledge what this number means.
Yeah.
You can tell the program by pre-parsing it, so graphical programs could do that. If they know this is an address field, then the number should be spelled one by one. And if this is a number field, then it should be read as a number. So in open office spreadsheets, this should work well.
Is it very common that phone number starts with a
zero in Germany?
In German it is, yes.
Okay, it isn't here.
Oh, okay. Well, if you start with an international phone number with a plus at the beginning, this is working better.
Yeah.
You can add it probably to the parser. eSpeak is fairly easy to change.
Gut, zeigen wir noch was?
Multimedia sagt dann zu sein, dass wir da also die Möglichkeit haben. Wie gesagt, wir haben leider keine dabei, aber es geht. Und Audio, CDs und gespeicherte Sachen.
Does anybody has a video CD with them?
Oh, unfortunately not.
That's another function that we added because blind people in fact like to watch videos from time to time, even if they can only hear what's been happening. If you are in a group and if you want to watch a video, that's possible with our system too, because it uses the frame buffer of Linux. You can display any graphics, you can display any video on the screen, just visible like a picture. So it's not text graphics that you see, that would be terrible. It's a real video, and of course you can hear the audio part of it in the quality that's provided by the video CD on the DVD. There's a very easy to use notebook inside. Let me see if I have the hardware part of this. There's a small notebook which allows you to have a very primitive memo file structure. You just give an abbreviation for a file and then you write something into it and it's being stored under that name and you can access it later again. It's about the thing that each Braille device has built in. If you don't have a Braille device, your computer will do it for you on the hard disk. This is the software thing that you can do with those. This would be a hardware notebook for blind people with dots in it. And if you know the Braille alphabet, you can use this pen and make little dots into a piece of paper. And so you can send a postcard to someone who cannot see what you have written with a pen. And if you don't know the Braille alphabet, it's even written on the back. It's also very practical. This would be the hardware notebook, and the same thing we try to do here with a small notebook that allows you to store simple text if you want to remember. Texterkennung. Mm-hmm. Text recognition may be a very important part.
You want to have a look at it?
Where do you buy this?
There are special shops for blind people which sell those things. It's about 10 euro. It's just a little piece of plastic with pre-allocated dots at the back, and then you can put a piece of paper, or rather a postcard, a heavy piece of paper, and make dots on it. Text recognition. All we had about a year ago was GOCR, which is, I would say, pretty good for single column text on very clean pieces of paper. Google has started a new project recently, which is called OCR Opus, and this is supposed to be providing data to the Million Book Project. So they scan books very fast with machines. They put all the graphics through the Ocropus text recognition, and what's outcoming is HTML text or plain text. Works pretty well. If you have some programming skills, you can just add your language by patching some C files, and it also has layout recognition as far as detecting multiple column texts. What it doesn't do yet is if the page is turned around, it kind of detects that automatically. So if you don't get any text when scanning a piece of paper, you just have to try to turn around the page and retry again. It should do that automatically sooner or later, and you can probably wrap it up in a script that does that automatically. The more text that's recognized means the more text, or the more likely the page is turned in the right direction. So if you have a scanner plugged into your computer, you can read letters or books in decent quality. I would say error rate is about maximum of 10 to 15% at the moment, and it's getting better as the product improves. The release date for Ocropus is supposed, I think, to be this time next year, when it's available for different distributions for download. At the moment, we are using the SVN version with patches for German and natively it's in English. I think Norwegian is already supported, but this also needs a patch to the front ends. Yeah. Some of these are private functions that we have added later for our own telephone, like getting a caller ID list who called us while we were gone. Next item, switches on or off the internet, which means connects you or disconnects you. We still live in an area where we have no broadband connection. All we have is ISDN, and we won't get the flat rate, and so I have to do the caller ID, the call-by-call provider thing, changing the provider every 2 hours or so, which is not nice. And it also causes telephone costs, so for safety we switch off the internet connection when we don't need it, and this is what point 11 does. Usually you should only need to set up the internet once and it will connect and disconnect on demand. Gut, nächster Punkt. Darwin.
Heider kann was sagen, Darwin, hör auf bitte zu kuscheln.
It's an audio disc. we should have removed that previous. This is a reverse answering machine. So this doesn't record a message, it calls people and sends a WAV file. You can use this if someone really annoys you and you just want to call him automatically every now and then with his own voice playing back or something like this. It's also useful as a SOS function, as an emergency function that this thing can call someone and speak a text into the phone, which will then be listened to at the other side. So it's actually a good function, but it's probably misnamed.
Das ist für die Leute, die gerade vorhin mit Bildern gucken, die durch die Knöpfe verschollen gegangen sind.
Ja, aber das will ich jetzt nicht unbedingt alles erzählen, oder?
Okay. I have been stolen. I have been stolen.
Oh, that's true. Calling home, that would be a possibility. But that would be get very bad press. For shell purists, we also have a shell function on popular demand. It wasn't there a year ago. I inserted it because so many people asked about it. The whole sense of the Adriano system should be that you can work with Linux without knowing anything about Linux. Not about Linux, not about the shell, not about any programs. It just should just allow you to access the functions that are inside the menu. And for people who know the shell, of course, it's still usable. You can get a shell and type commands as you are used to. Soll ich noch?
Ja, also das ist eigentlich, also ich erzähle, wie du sagst es.
Okay.
Ja, das ist einfach so gekommen, dass du mir einen Rechner geschenkt hast, also zu Weihnachten, und ich wollte damit nichts zu tun haben.
She just tells the story how she got to computers, because Adriana is not really a computer affiliate person. She hates those things because... oh, does this mean my time is over or...? Okay, Sie haben das Licht ausgeschaltet.
Vielleicht war das der Trick dabei,
das sind da die Zellin, die laufen immer hin und her.
Könnt ihr euch bitte hinsetzen? Es reicht jetzt.
The front
oder ihr geht raus.
Lights were turned on.
Okay. Oh.
I'll turn it off.
So back to the story. I tried to buy her a computer because I thought it would make her life easier, because she can do lots of things with a computer that she cannot do without, like online banking, going shopping on the internet, getting things so she doesn't even have to leave the house. She thought it was terrible. She didn't even open it.
Ich glaube, dass ich dann irgendwann also diese wunderschöne Werbung im Fernsehen gesehen habe, so für Shopping auf eBay und so.
So she put the computer behind the door in the storage room. It was lying there for half a year. I was a little disappointed because I already had spent lots of work on that computer to get the speech output working. And then there was these commercials coming up in television about eBay and that there are lots of colorful things, especially shoes and other things that women like to buy. Ja.
Ja, dass ich dann also halt dich gefragt habe, ob du das mit dem eBay also mir vorzeigen könntest, wie das funktioniert, und dann hast du mir das auf deinen Rechner gezeigt und dann hast du halt gemeint, ja, das könnte jetzt, also ich könnte es jetzt auch an meinen eigenen Rechner haben, hast es mir halt nicht installiert.
So I have been showing her how eBay works with Conqueror and Mozilla and also E-Links with speech output, and she liked it, of course. And then I told her, well, it's on your computer, you can use it as well. And that was the point where she really started using computers. It was the first time since her school where they had used DOS computers to learn Braille on Braille devices. So this was the first time she really used computers because she wanted to use the computer to do something actually, and not someone who told her to do it. Good, and since then we extended the system with more and more functions. So eBay was probably the starter for the entire project.
Für mich war es wichtig, dass es also ziemlich einfach strukturiert ist. Also da haben wir auch an den Pre-Patents orientiert, also dass es halt im Menü also aufgebaut ist.
For her it was important that this is really easy to use because she had no previous computer skills. She knew the layout of the keyboard because they had learned that in school. Mostly the arrow keys, the return key, and the layout of different keys. Of course, the Adriana system speaks each key as it is being pressed, so you can learn it by doing as well. And jetzt habe ich den Faden verloren. Easy to use, genau. So that was also the reason to try to think different and not putting any program names in the menu, but put functions in the menu. So I want to go to the internet. That we're using E-Links is a nice fact, but it's not really required to know that. And for this reason, the menu is also very flat. There are no or not much sub-menus, except for multimedia, which contains of MP3, videos, and other things, where you can select from a list of what you want to do. So it's designed for computer beginners who have the first contact with the computer as well, independently from being blind or not.
Ja, und so haben wir dann halt das erweitert, und deswegen ist es für uns auch wichtig, dass das, ist das wieder darin gewesen?
Das ist wieder darin gewesen.
Dass es individuell also anpassbar ist.
It was also important that it can be changed individually. The more people that are using it, some of them just don't need some of these functions. There are appliances where you only need the internet or accessing a database from a web browser. For this, like call centers. Call centers sometimes hire blind people who can answer phone calls and connect to the right person or look up information. And for them, just a web browser accessing a database would be just sufficient. And we can change the menu to contain only the stuff that's really needed, or extend the menu in order to match what the user really needs. It's very modular. Sollen wir den nächsten Punkt nehmen mit dem grafischen Interface?
Ja,
ich kann es auch zeigen.
Ich
Oh, okay. Eins runter bitte, da ist ein neuer Punkt. Grafische Oberfläche KI, ja, Return. Ja, grafische Oberfläche starten, Return. So this is a quite new function. For most blind people, working with a graphical interface is kind of inconvenient, and we just cannot change that because the graphical interface is focused on the mouse. However, it is possible for a blind person to work with programs that are often used on the graphical desktops, like OpenOffice, like Mozilla, like some other programs.
Welcome to Audio.
And this is eSpeak. Actually, this is the English eSpeak voice. Now OpenOffice is being started.
Terminal frame, terminal.
A terminal, so we have a shell in case something goes wrong.
OpenOffice.org frame panel.
And this is a talking OpenOffice in English. And well, now we can try to access some of the menus or functions that OpenOffice has. So of course we cannot use the mouse if we don't know where to click. So the mouse should actually disappear in the final version, but it's still possible to use it the normal way. What you see on the top is a graphical representation of the Braille device. So you can read what a blind person would read on the Braille device, those of you who can see the screen. So it just says where we are in the main panel of OpenOffice. Kannst du die linke Alt-Taste kurz antippen?
Left Alt, File Menu, Menu Bar, File Menu.
So this reads the file menu of OpenOffice once you click the hotkey Alt, which is, I think it's the same on Windows and in many GTK Plus programs. And once you go up and down with the cursor keys, each menu item is being read to you and the function of this menu is also read to you. So if we go one down on the new menu item, you will hear that it says it's a menu. Kannst du mit dem Cursor nach unten, kurz mit dem Pfeil nach unten?
New menu.
New menu, that means it has a submenu. So we can go to the submenu mit rechter Cursor-Taste. Cursor
text. Text document.
Yeah. So we can create a new text document, or if we go down with the cursor, it will read to you all the menu items. So I would say just let's start a top text document first, or maybe even a spreadsheet, because spreadsheets are extremely difficult to use because of the graphical way tabulars are presented. Immer noch eins runter.
Spreadsheet.
Und dann auf Return. Ja, das sollte eigentlich jetzt ein Spreadsheet aufmachen.
Panel Grade, Menu Grade, Untitled 1, OpenOffice.org, Calc Root Pane, Sheet, Sheet 1, Table Grade, A1.
In a few sentences, it just read the entire information that you have about this program. Look, it said, we are in sheet number 1. It was probably too fast, but once you get used to OpenOffice and the speech outputs, you can at any time let it reread this. You are on sheet 1, you are in the main table, and we are in cell, it's still on the Braille device, in the graphical Braille device, we are in cell A number 1. So if you move the cursor keys now, you get told in which part of the spreadsheet you are. Gehst du mal mit den Cursor Keys immer nach unten und nach rechts so ein bisschen, da geht das so ein bisschen in die Mitte. Ja, und nach rechts.
B2, B3, B4, B5, C5.
Ja, gut, reicht schon. Und jetzt vielleicht mal was tippen, sowas wie Test oder so. Das wird nicht auf der Braille-Zeile erscheinen.
T.
Ja. Und Return.
Sheet 1, Table, Grade, Test, C5, C6.
Ja, gut. Also das Test hat er angenommen und wir sind jetzt auf Sheet 1.
Ich muss Englisch sprechen.
Oh. Did I do this before? I have terrible trouble to switch between languages, as you may have noticed. I
was first.
I'm sorry. So, thanks. Danke. So we are in sheet number 1, and we just edited table entry number C5, and we are now in table entry number C6. And now you can enter formulas, do calculations, and browse the table just with the cursor keys, and Orca, which is the graphical screen reader, will just read the text to you that is in the individual table. Gehen wir mal zu Textverarbeitung. Das wäre wieder kurz die Alt-Taste antippen, die linke.
Can I ask a question?
Left Alt, File Menu, Menu Bar, File Menu.
Good.
I was wondering how we can see the difference between a formula and its outcome.
That's kind of hard, because you cannot for sure know how it will look in the graphics mode, especially when it's at which point it will be wrapped around the page, or which column will be on a different page because the size doesn't fit. That's a kind of unsolved problem. For those, we would need templates. So if a blind person has to enter forms with tabulars, we would need a template that fits into one page and that has fixed positions, and he just changes with tab to the individual form entry and inserts the text and hits return to print it. So this would be the best solution. Of course, my favorite solution would be just not using graphical programs but LaTeX, which would probably be no scientific text processing, but of course everybody who formerly used Microsoft Office will want to use OpenOffice, so this is a good choice that allows to access really any function that's present in OpenOffice with speech output.
Wir wollten noch einen Text starten, also Pfeil nach unten.
New menu.
Nach rechts.
Text document.
Genau, Textdokument. Ja, bitte.
C6. Untitled 2, OpenOffice.org, writer frame, panel.
Dann tipp nochmal Test, bitte.
Du sprichst dann aber auch Englisch, ja?
Ja.
T, E-F-T.
Gut. Gut. Mit dem Cursor nach oben.
Test.
Und jetzt mit dem Cursor bis ans Ende vom Test, und zwar mit der Shift-Taste, mit der Hochstelltaste, um das zu markieren. Nee. Mit der Hochstelltaste, wie wenn eine Großschrift.
Left Shift.
Ja, und nach rechts, solange bis wir am Ende vom Test sind.
Also muss ich das
gedrückt halten? Gedrückt halten.
Left Shift.
Und nach rechts.
Nach rechts, ja.
T selected.
Ja, weiter.
T selected. Weiter. Test selected.
Ja.
T selected. Test new line.
Good. So we can also use cut and paste with the keyboard, and we can change text attributes. Den Key kennst du noch nicht. Von der rechten Alt-Taste 2 nach rechts. Oder eins links von der rechten Steuerungstaste.
Kannst du das machen?
Ja, ich mach das. So. This is the context menu, which you will get if you hit the right mouse button over a selected text. This is on the keyboard, a key that we have never used before in the Adriana system. This is the menu key that's right on the keyboard. Some computers have a penguin on it, some computers have some kind of square windows on it. And it opens the context menu that you would get with a mouse, and now you can select text attributes. I'm doing this because I've done
default form, font menu, size menu, title menu, world, menu grade.
So now I made the text in boldface, and how does the user know that it's in boldface when he's reading it? There's a function in the graphical screen reader which allows to tell you what kind of text attributes a text has.
Caps lock, size 12, family name Thorndale, AMD, world.
So, size 12, it said, font name Thorndale, AMT, and it's boldface. So, if you browse the text and place the cursor somewhere and you hit caps lock and F, you get told which text attributes have been used here. So, actually, you have a kind of image on how the text looks like, though it's not possible to really imagine how it looks like if you cannot really see the screen. Okay, I think I have covered Orca with OpenOffice a great way. I think we are running out of time also, so I will just keep presenting some more features with a graphical desktop that we are now using. Apart from the speech output, we have the possibility to magnify the screen in kind of real time. Jetzt haben wir keine Maus angeschlossen, aber ich kann deinen Computer nehmen. Da müsste ich dahin, wo du stehst. Würdest du das ausmachen, ein Stück nach rechts zu gehen? Okay. So, maybe you already have seen from all the fancy
OpenOffice.org 2.3 the document untitled 1 OpenOffice.org calc frame cheat sheet 1 take OpenOffice.org 2
I'm switching Orca off. Orca is the thing that can speak GTK programs. Yeah.
About Orca, you when you were selecting the boldface text,
yes.
You saw Orca with boldface. Obviously, that doesn't show up on the Braille reader, but it had two lines under. Is there any indication on the Braille?
That's true. If you have additional dots under the letters in the preview of the Braille device, that also activates point 7 and 8 on the real Braille device. So you can show some of the text attributes. You can choose which ones by additional dots on the Braille device. So you can not only hear it, but also feel it on the Braille device. That's true. Thank you. So I'm stopping Orca in order to show something of...
Welcome to Orca. Orca screen reader stroke magnified ray.
Actually, I had set it in a way that it doesn't stop, it just pops up again in case it crashes or the user closes it accidentally. So in order to hear something... we have to have ourselves that way, or maybe we just start the Orca preferences. I just need some kind of window to display something. So our 3D desktop Beryl or Compiz has some overview functions which are not really accessibility related, but it also has some functions for changing the look and feel of the screen. Like if you have very small buttons that are hard to read with the text, it can do a continuous scale upwards, and it also does some anti-aliasing, so the fonts do not look too much pixelized. And it can magnify really large, also the mouse cursor, until you get one character per screen. Then of course the anti-aliasing fails, and it's getting a little too dark. But one other feature, this kind of magnification is focus enabled, so if a new window pops up, it will automatically center to that window and change the magnification so it fits the newly popped up window. So always in that part that where something happens on the screen. And this is very good for vision impaired people. If you use just a plain magnifier, you will not notice if you're working on the left part of the screen that something happens in the right part of the screen. This magnifier can detect that there's a new window open and zoom to it and fit the zoom size so that it exactly fits the zoomed window. Of course, then you can still enlarge again or go down again. For some kind of visionary disabilities, some colors are kind of hard to detect, like green or red. And for these, it's possible to switch the colors, color reverse for one single window, the others stay just like they are, or color reverse for the entire screen, which will also change any menus and buttons and desktop icons that are on the screen. So this is very practical for vision impaired people too. Also, there's some help with concentration. If you have multiple windows on the screen, it can change the background windows so that they almost disappear. So they get very, very light, and they are not shown so much anymore. So the user knows exactly in which window he is just working. The window that has the focus will be the one that is displayed with the full opacity. So these are actual functions of a graphical window manager that you wouldn't expect to have these options. Of course, some of the effects are just plain fun, and we can make windows transparent. But some of the Compiz features are really good also for in terms of accessibility, like that real-time zoom. It's not a complete program, it's just a plug-in for that 3D window manager. And you don't need any special hardware except a graphics card that works with GLX under Linux. Most Intel graphics cards do, so if you bought a new laptop with an Intel graphics card on board, that will work. And ATI cards usually work well. For newer ATI cards, they are just developing an open source driver. For NVIDIA, you will have for now to use the proprietary NVIDIA driver. Okay, so rotating the desktop is not really something accessibility related. I will switch back to my own notebook and try to shorten it a little. Was abschalten?
Ja, wie lange mein
Notebook?
Nee, nicht abschalten, einfach umschalten.
Ich habe jetzt mein Notebook geschlossen. Achso, wieder auf Textmodus, ja. Textmodus ist aktiv. So, this was the Adriane system. We already announced availability of a live CD for April this year, which was fatally wrong. I still to have it released around Christmas this year, or well, maybe January. But from the technology, we have everything. The screen reader, the graphical magnification, the speech output with eSpeak. So it's just a just missing putting everything together and make a nice GUI to configure it from the shell or from the graphical environment. I think I cannot show much more of the remaining 28 slides. So maybe we just start questions and answers right now, and I will just display one more slide at the end for future extensions and future work to be done. Yep.
How is the Braille voice connected to the computer?
This Braille device has Bluetooth support, which is very comfortable. Unfortunately, it's not easy to convince your health insurance to get you one. So you have to write several letters and insist on current law, which says in Germany that you, as the blind user, have your choice of Braille device. Whatever you think fits you best has to be accepted by the health insurance. Of course, they don't tell you that. You have to find out by yourself. And at first time, they reject everything and say, well, you can read somehow and take this box with lots of cables, which is 100 years old. But if you insist on getting the Braille device of your choice, you get one. And this one has Bluetooth. Also, the cell phones and printers and most other parts are connected via Bluetooth. You can, per Bluetooth adapter, connect up to 7 devices. So, not a lot of cable.
But is most Braille devices connected with Bluetooth, or is this something similar?
I think it's about half and half nowadays. Because Handytech, which is making the Ferrari of the Braille devices, because they have implemented Bluetooth, other vendors are now doing the same to make it easier to work with the device. So you don't have to carry along your computer. You can just take your Braille device and read the book from the kitchen table. You don't have to stay near the computer all the time. So half and half. You just have to check the specs if they have or not. Yeah.
I have just gotten a new cell phone, and it can route audio to Bluetooth without any problems. And since the Braille reader also is Bluetooth, is it possible to route text? Is that present in any firmware? How is the accessibility on modern cell phones with Braille devices interoperating with those?
There are some vendors. I think it's a Nokia phone, Nokia 61 something. You know?
There's some software that...
Talks.
Talks.
It's a Java-based software called Talks. I think it costs about €600, and it's only working on a special kind of cell phone. There's no general application layer which would make texts on the cell phone accessible, though they are stored as texts, so if you transfer them via Bluetooth, reading them is no problem. But so far there is no free software available on cell phones that can read SMS directly, so our approach is just use any cell phone that you want to buy and connect it via Bluetooth to your computer, and you can do all the things with your computer. In fact, it's much easier to type an SMS on the computer keyboard than on the cell phone keyboard.
I have a question for Adriana, which is, what part is there? One part of the technology that she likes especially?
Gibt's eine Frage an dich? Welchen Teil von der ganzen Technik gefällt dir am besten?
Das war das.
Ich finde das eigentlich ganz spannend. Also das hat mich früher überhaupt nicht interessiert. Ich war so abgeschreckt von der Schule, also von den, du kannst ja mal vielleicht die Geschichte erzählen mit unseren Windows-Rechner, den wir beantragt haben, der dann nachts also anfing zu sprechen. Also für mich ist es einfach cool, dass ich, egal wo ich bin, immer also ins Internet kann, und das ist einfach toll, also dass man die Möglichkeiten hat, auch als Blinder.
She says, well, of course she likes everything we added to the system. Of course she asks a lot of questions and says, what if we do this way, which would be easier. The part she likes most is the mobility. Most accessible systems which are financed through health insurance are Windows-based, and they are very strict about the type of computer. It must be an old desktop computer, which you just cannot carry along with you. So our system works on anything that runs Linux. So from very small notebooks like the ASUS EPC to expensive ones, or even on small PDAs that can run Linux.
Basically all she needs is a CD.
Basically all she needs or she will need is the Live Adriana CD that we are developing. What you are seeing here is currently installed on her computer. It's a little behind the development system that I'm running on mine. But the Live CD would be the possibility for any blind user to put just a CD into any computer with a sound card and use that computer to surf the internet. So this adds a lot of freedom and mobility to your life. You can use the system you are used at home anywhere on the world, and you don't have to worry about licenses, about dongles. All that expensive text recognition and speech software comes with dongles and copy protection that should not allow it to use it on any other computer than the one you bought it. With Linux and free software, we don't have that. We can install it everywhere. We can just give away CDs and use them freely.
Also eigentlich ist alles für mich offen. Also das mit den SMS erlesen und schreiben, das ist eigentlich auch also was Wunderbares. Yeah. Ja.
Also the SMS part, reading and writing SMS like any person with vision does every day on their cell phone, is a very practical part. We got a Windows computer before. It's the only a Windows computer in my household, which was meant for her. It's a text recognition system based on FineReader, which we don't use anymore. We were used to letting the computers on all day. They go into power save mode and they don't consume a lot of electricity that way. And this Windows computer was left on. And in the middle of the night, at about 3 o'clock, it started talking. Your system has become insecure. You must do something. And she said to me, I think there's someone in the house. So we were not used to a system doing something on its own without us having set it that way. And the Windows computer was very frightening. And since then, it's just switched off, and we are just using the Braille device we got with it anymore. So it's also a fine thing that you can leave a Linux computer on. It doesn't consume much electricity. You can sit there anytime, start reading your email, surfing the internet. You don't have to do the complicated shutdown and boot up procedure that Windows has, and you always land in your main menu where you know where to go from there.
The other thing I find interesting about this whole approach is I feel a certain affinity for this system, because I've been struggling with RSI this year. And what I find is I want to type as little as possible. I want to have simple interfaces. I don't want to use the mouse. Basically, I like things that are sort of console-like. And the more I think about it, the more I really like a program like Mutt, which has commands in the mini buffer, and then where you can do like a quick search. And this is why I was emphasizing, I noticed she uses the down arrow key a lot. And if your fingers are hurting, you don't want to use the down arrow keys a lot. So what you want is to have a quick search in page. And so because maybe she corresponds with 100 people, and then she just wants to be able to type C, L, and then it will jump to the line that says Klaus, and she can hit enter, instead of having to listen to 50 voices of 50 different people.
It's about one keystroke per command. So searching is one keystroke, then you enter your search text. Replacing text, going to a certain email, you just type the number, you are there. Resorting the email, everything just one keystroke. So That's very nice. That's why I wanted to use VI tool.
More in that direction.
Yeah, that's true. So the visual interface, which is the menu system, should really be easier to navigate. So if you type a key, you jump directly to the function associated with that key. Dialog, which we are currently using, doesn't support that yet. Maybe it would be good to implement a web page instead with some JavaScript on it, which e-links can process, and then use the JavaScript functions in a web page to access functions more easily.
Use the power of links.
Yeah. Really. Yeah.
That's true. We are running out of time.
We are running out of time. Okay, so I will jump right to the conclusion. Was it something about? What I think I will just go to the last page. Okay, what has to be said is GTK is a slightly ahead of Qt and KDE at the moment. We can perfectly read graphical GTK widgets, but we cannot do that with KDE yet. So every program that's supposed to work with Orca has to be a GTK program. I hope this will change with Qt FIA, which is using dbus in order to transport that meta information to screen readers, and then it should work with Orca as well.
It seems to me that you're saving the governments and insurance companies a lot of money by doing this. Are you getting any support from them?
Unfortunately, it looks like it is very popular to finance proprietary solutions, where after you have financed a new language or a new solution, you have to pay again to get licenses for the solution you just financed. This seems to be more popular. But usually there's no money for development, there's just money for products. If you buy so many products and licenses, this is okay. But if you pay for development, for something that everybody can use, this seems to be a big problem. So we try to rephrase our work in terms of a product. You order a product and we are developing that just under the GPL. But there's no governmental agency who would support that right now. We got some money and development finance from non-profit organizations who will get the first versions for distribution, and they build a business on that, like services, teaching, seminars, and try to refinance the development via commercial services around the systems.
If you would buy this from a commercial vendor, do you know how much it would likely cost someone?
A Windows-based system cannot do everything that we can, but the base functions like screen reader, web access, and scanning texts and reading them to you costs about 10,000 euro, including the Braille device. If you subtract the Braille device of 3,000 euros, you land at 7,000 euros for an accessible Windows system. And this Windows system is mostly software licenses. So you get a very cheap old desktop computer, loud, with lots of fans inside. You get a 16-inch monitor that you don't really need if you're blind. Everything else is software licenses, dongles, installation, and support, which is very sad because our system can do the same and cost nothing. It's just not easy to get the government to pay for something that costs nothing. It costs development, it costs improvement, and it needs to adaption for languages and for special needs of users. So this is the part that costs money, but it's not a per user amount of money, it's just for per development. Yeah.
Yes, can I ask you for some estimate maybe, that if you're going to do this for Norwegian, you have the language material from, they have kind of made Norwegian accessible language stuff, I call it. Mm-hmm. From the Norwegian Language Bank. They have made a kind of voluntarily thing there. They can get it for free. How much work did you get to put all these pieces together?
Yeah. For a festival language, we estimated 2 months of full-time work for people, depending on the hourly wage of them, 30,000, 40,000 euros. For the speech engine, for a new language.
Okay.
For Norwegian, I just don't know for which dialect, it's already supporting eSpeak. I don't know how good it is. I installed it half an hour ago, or 1 hour and half an hour ago. I don't know how good it is, but it talks like it sounds Norwegian. Let me try to start it. So, Orca is set to for E-Links to start Norwegian already. I set Open Office for Norwegian menus. Just an old computer that needs its time for starting up. And the menus are already translated, so we have to do not much work for the programs itself. They usually have a very good translation of language files. But does it sound like Norwegian?
Yeah, kind of.
Pretty fine. See, and this is...
he's like the Norwegian chef in the Muppet Show.
He's Swedish.
He's kind of making other jokes.
Well,
he's American.
For E-Links, I would say it's about 2 weeks of full-time work. For Festival, it's 2 months. For eSpeak, it's about 2 weeks of full-time work. So, 2 weeks and maybe... €10,000 later, you have a perfectly sounding Norwegian version. Not from me, because I don't speak Norwegian, but a native Norwegian speaker should do this. And, well, then we have a speech output for every program, because we only need to program that once, and every GTK program will be able to use it.
You talked about the iAccessible 2 standard and the debug bus integration. Mm-hmm. And after that, I get emails. It's unofficial, of course. It's both from Red Hat developers and also Firefox developers, mm-hmm. writing that everybody wants to put their power behind dbus. Mm-hmm. So what has maybe to be done is with Orca is to make a dbus interface on that Corba interface.
I can comment on that because Corba and Orbit is deprecated and. Right now, they are actually pretty much moving to dbus as a backend for AtSpy and ATK. So eventually, the Orbit, Corba, Bonobo adventure will be dead. By that time, hopefully, KDE will actually support ATK. So
KDE actually does that already, kind of a little. But it's also about testing and make it stable and introduce everything into every part of the infrastructure. And that has to take a little time. It's also about having a good screen reader that you can really have something to test against.
I think Orca is pretty good. It's written in Python, so it should also be pretty easy to write a dbus interface for it. I think it already has some, but it's not used yet.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, Orca doesn't care about Orbit or Corba or Bonobo. It just needs a transport player, and that's AtSpy. That's
a dbus transport player.
Now AtSpy uses Corba, but AtSpy won't be using Corba
for very long. Because it's just Orca that's using it right now.
I've been to accessibility meetings in Linux Foundation, several of them.
And it has been kind of forces there. Let's say it's because you can read the resume anyway. It's about Sun Microsystems don't want to change. Mm-hmm. They are on the move, but all other want, as he said, move to dbus, making a wrapper and make it playing in a new infrastructure.
That's actually not true. I was at the Accessibility Summit at the GNOME Boston this for a couple of months ago, and I spoke to Will Walker, the lead of Orca. And the main reason that they've been using Orbit so far is because Orbit, simply put, performs better. It does. And unlike all the other applications that use Orbit, the accessibility layer has a load of traffic, really hard amount of traffic. So unlike like the little notifications that like send one message every, if you're lucky, every 10 seconds, this one, I mean, how much information do you transmit when you open a text document? So that's the main reason they have been somewhat against moving away from Orbit. But the consensus at the Accessibility Summit in Boston was that if we keep